Perhaps we've given the 5 minutes of grace for those who may be coming a moment late. It might be well to get started and to use our time efficiently. You know you've come to hear Mr. Earl Oldperson, who is the chairman of the Blackfeet Tribe, the president of the National Congress of American Indians, and also president of the Affiliated Tribes of the Northwest. He's been in tribal politics for quite some years. Tell you how many, 15 or more, and I think is the preeminent spokesman of today for American Indian politics, tribal politics, and also the relation of American Indians to the federal government, and the state governments too, for that matter, although most of their relations are with the federal government. So without taking more of his time, I turn this over to Mr. Earl Oldperson, and glad to hear what he has to tell us, and I hope you will have some questions to ask of him. Mr. Oldperson.
Thank you, Mr. Hetzel. First of all, I want to say that it's really an opportunity to be here, and mainly because it's really warm here in Philadelphia and Haverford. I was a little late coming yesterday because of a snowstorm that we had in Montana, especially the area where I come from. But other than that, I made every effort to be here to visit the area and to have this chance in talking with you people today. I know that there are many questions that go through the minds of people who are not too familiar with the Indian reservations, with the Indian tribes, and with the Indians themselves. I think sometimes we as the Indian people we often find ways and means of getting into the outside area. And I mean this by saying out from the reservations. What we could do to really take part in what is taking place in this country that we live in. But nevertheless, we are trying to develop in any way we possibly could with our reservation, with the people. We are trying to build leadership, so that the leadership that we have would be the people that we will look toward as our spokesmen, or as the people that will go forth and be our voice so that we may be heard. It is often stated among the Indian people that it seems though that the Indian race have been forgotten somehow. We are referred to as a minority group, which I guess is true. But regardless what group we are, we are still considered as American citizens. And I refer to the Indian people as the Indian Americans, because I know that we are not a foreigners. If we are, well, I don't know where we come from. But we always claim that this land that we have within our possession at this time is a land that belonged to us. If it was reserved for us, I don't know who reserved it for us. But it was a land that was left that we try to stay on and try to keep. As I was speaking to some of the young men here this morning, I stated that the government or the people that came to this country, as they moved westward, they saw that there were Indian people, there were people living in the country that they have discovered. And they saw that there were a great number of these people that were here. So I guess they tried in many ways to come together with the Indian people. They often referred to us as the red men. Or sometimes they referred to us as savages. But regardless of what name we come under, they tried to come together with us. I guess sometimes they went to the extreme. They wanted to have wars in order to try to settle things. But after that did not work, they went and tried to find other ways and means of getting together. So finally they began working out treaties, agreements with the Indian people. And by these treaties and agreements that they had made, they were bargaining all the time. And what they were bargaining for? They were bargaining for our lands that we had. Although that the Indian people tried in every way to stop the people from occupying the lands that they thought that they owned, they went to wars. They fought with the armies, trying to keep what they had. But I guess we were unfortunate in doing so. And so we went along with the treaties, the agreements that the government had come and wanted to have the Indian people agree to. They stopped us from having wars. They stopped the Indians from fighting amongst one another. But during the First World War, during the Second World War, the Korean conflict, and now the war in Vietnam, the Indians were not excluded. We were engaged in fighting again. This we are not. We do not protest. We do not go against, because we feel that we are part of this country that we live in. We feel that we should give a helping hand, because we feel that this is a land that we are in and we're going to be here. But as we went along, the Indian people, the Indian leaders begin to see that there were certain things that were told of them, that this is how the government is going to take care of you, this is how the government is going to help you along, and they begin to see that the government was not abiding by many of these treaties or these agreements that were made. And so this is where there was a difference of opinions. They begin to disagree with the federal government. They begin to try to present something to the government that this is what we want and this is what we need. This is what we should have for our reservations and for the people. Or we try to point out this is a treaty that's been made. This is an agreement that we agreed upon. But many a times, you know, we are told that these treaties, these agreements no longer stand because Congress passed an act that supersedes your treaties and your agreements. And in many cases, our ancestors, our leaders, for instance, my father, who was a man that did not speak English, did not understand English, very little understanding, could not read. He often spoke of what his father had told him about treaties and agreements that were made with the federal government or with the people that they had come in contact with. But these were verbally spoken. We begin to try to find where we could find something that was written, black and white. We could never find it. And so again, this was something that was giving to them and made them believe that this is what is written down. And so there are many ways that our leaders in the past have disagreed with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the federal government in its operations. They felt that the agreements that were made were being ignored by them and that they were not living up to what they had promised the Indian people. But as I say, we consider ourselves as a minority group, and I believe this is one of the reasons why many of our young people today, students, it's like you, who are in universities, colleges, are forming an Indian club, an Indian organization within the colleges that they are attending. They want to be heard. They want someone to listen to what they have to say. They are concerned of what is taking place today of the Indian people. We have not only students or youths. We have young adults who are quite concerned today. And as Mr. Hetzel and myself were visiting, we agreed that it is true that many of these people have long waited that some recognition would be made of the Indian people. And their patience is gradually going out. They could no longer wait. So they are trying other ways now. In fact, there are some of our young people, there are some organizations now who are leaning towards the militant way, which we as the leaders are trying to avoid. We do not think that this is the kind of a move that we should make as of now, unless we are ignored, unless we are just being pushed aside, then if this is the way that you accomplish something, then I guess that's the way to go. But I do not think that this is the way. I believe that our Indian people are intelligent enough. I believe they are people who are able to stand and speak in an intelligent way, that they could be recognized and that they could be heard. We have our tribal governments today. I believe almost every tribe that have a reservation have tribal council members. And I think most of these people who have tribal council, most of these tribes that have council members, elect their council members. And a council itself is the governing body of the reservation and of the tribe. I just want to use the Blackfeet Tribal Council as an example. In 1934, when the Indian Reorganization Act took place by Congress, it is often referred to as the Wheeler-Howard Bill. This is when a bill was introduced and it was passed by Congress, whereby Indian tribes will adopt the constitution and bylaws that they will operate under. And this is when electing tribal council members began at that time. The Blackfeet members accepted this act. And so this is when council members were elected. And we are the governing body. Anything that has to do with tribal affairs, tribal assets, it is the council that governs. And they are the members that are the voice for the people. They have the authority to transact anything that they feel that would be a benefit for their people and the reservation. We work with the BIA very closely, but at the present they are not to the point where that we are directly under the BIA. Before we had the council members and before we had the power to transact our own business, we were directly under the BIA, and they told us what to do. They told us how to do things and what we must do and all this and that. The Blackfeet Reservation is made of about 1.5 million acre land. And not all of the reservation is owned by the tribe. It is not tribally owned. Much of this land is owned by individuals. They had an allotment act that took place back in 1910 and again around 1919. This is when the members were giving certain acreage of land. These lands that are owned individually, the tribal council have no authority whatsoever in transacting any business that pertains to these kinds of lands. These lands are still, they go to the individual, and the individual will deal with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. If they wanted to sell a land, if they wanted to lease a land, they will have to work through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Indian Agency. But anything that is tribal, this is what the tribal council members take care of. And this land that we owned, these original owners, as they pass on, they have the family that they leave. They become heirs of this land. And this is one of the things that is becoming very difficult on the reservation. Because each time there is 3-4 heirs to a land, the land is fractionated. It is divided. And much of this land is still being divided. And so we find where the people, the members who are heirs to these lands, they begin to have a little difference amongst themselves. They don't quite agree with how this land should be used. And so it is a problem. Some threaten that they want to sell this land because they are not being able to use it now. This is one way of losing our land. So these are some of the problems that we are confronted with. These are some of the things that we try to solve. And one of the moves that the National Congress, the affiliated tribes of the Northwest, are trying to make is how we can make these lands come under one ownership again. Or how we can satisfy the owners and have them agree that it would be come under one ownership. Because I say that our lands that we own is the backbone of our reservation. If we lose the land, then we have no reservation. And if we have no reservation, we need no council. We're going to have to move out. And so these are some of the problems that we have, and this is some of the ways that we are transacting our business. We are trying to make a move in such way so that we, as the Indian leaders, would find a way of having a voice for the people throughout the United States as well as Alaska. And I believe this is where the National Congress comes in. This is one of the reasons why the National Congress was organized back in the early 40s. That we would have a place that we could go to with the problems that are in general so that we can come together and combine our efforts in making our presentation to the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C., to the Secretary of Interior, or to Congress. We try to urge the Indian tribes. We try to urge individuals to help with this organization. Since I become the president of the National Congress, which was last fall, in fact, I'm just in office for 6-7 months now. I am in hopes that the National Congress will not be just a name, and that we will not just build the membership, but that the National Congress would be able to take some action and make a move other than just having a title. There are many resolutions that are presented to the National Congress. We can have 100 resolutions, but if there is no follow-up, these resolutions can be introduced every year. The same resolutions. But we've got to do something with the resolutions that we have, what the people want, we've got to make a move somehow. And so we look not only to the Indian people, we look to the people, our white friends, who are interested in the Indian people. The whites who are interested in helping in any way they can towards the Indian problems. We look to them to help encourage this move. We have some of our white friends who are associate members, who are honorary members. And this is an encouragement to us, knowing that someone wants to be of help. Someone is interested. And so this is one way that we are moving. And the National Congress this year is making a move to recognize the young people, the youths. Because I think for quite a number of years, the young people were being ignored. We feel that they cannot help. They are not to the age where they should be interested, should be concerned. I think we should give recognition to the young people as much as we can, because they are going to be the leaders. Our young Indians are going to be the leaders in the future. We that are the leaders today will no longer be leaders. So we're going to have to depend upon the young who is coming up. And I believe that they should know something about the Indian problems. They should know something about our reservations, our Indian way of life. And I was quite surprised, especially this year, the past year, knowing that there are many Indian clubs that are being organized now. Even our own high school, back on the reservation, the town where I come from. They have an Indian club there. And their hopes is that they would learn more about their Indian way of life. They begin to see that it is important that they know something about their culture, their traditions, their Indian heritage. Many of our young people want to learn the language. They want to learn more about what the religion was in the past, what our ceremonies were, and the kind of life that our ancestors lived. Not that we want to go back and live in those old ways. Not that we want to go back and live in the teepees and be dressed in our regalias. But to continue the identity of the Indians. Myself, I am a full-blood Indian. I often refer to myself as an FBI, full-blood Indian. And I am proud to be what I am. But yet, I am also proud to be able to do what I can in your way of life. And when I say this, I mean in a white way, white man's way. I want to be able to stand and express myself. And I want to be able to do what I can for my fellow Indian. And to be able to help out in any way that I can with the many problems that we have with the Indian people. It is sad that our young people today, the young Indian children, cannot speak the language. They cannot understand the language. And they don't know enough about our Indian way of life. This is something that should be taught to the Indian people, to the youngsters, to the young people. If they want to learn about it, this is something that I am hoping that would be taught among the Indian youths. But as I say that there is a misunderstanding many times. It is because of lack of communication. There are people that feel that the Indian reservations, the people that live on a reservation still live in their teepees. They still dress in their regalias. They still go out hunting buffaloes. And sometimes they're a little bit disappointed when they come to the reservation and see something else. We had a group here that came a couple of years ago to our reservation, to our Indian festivities, Indian celebration. And they were quite offended, or they were disappointed. When they came to the reservation, they didn't see the people living in teepees. They didn't see the people wearing their Indian costumes. They didn't see the people living the way they should be living, the way they have heard and read about them, or the way that TVs and the movies show. So they were mighty disappointed. And they had an article that was written in one of our local papers where they weren't satisfied with their visit. They did not know that they resented the idea that Indian people should be watching television or should be living in modern homes and wearing nylon jackets. And so this is the lack of communication. We've got to relay the message for one another. And you can relay this message for us. To those of you who know, maybe there are some of you who have visited reservations. I know Mr. Hetzel has covered many areas. And by doing so, he is able to tell someone else of what the reservations are like. It could be likewise with we as Indian people. There are probably many things that we don't know about New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, or wherever it may be, that we've got to learn about, we've got to know about. And so, communication is quite important. I think we've got to communicate with the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C., a lot more so than we have been. I think they've got to try to communicate with us a lot more so that we can begin to understand one another as to what should be done. If they want to help the Indians, we should try to come together and get together and see what can be done. Because I think too many times they take for granted, well, this is what the Blackfeet needs. This is how the Blackfeet are living. And this is what should be done for them. This is paperwork. But I think they should come out and come to the areas where these problems lie. Come and meet with the leaders that know and that are dealing and working with the problems that exist on Indian reservations. But I find that with this, the tribal politics that we now have, the tribal councils that we have a little more leeway, whereby we are not being told by the BIA that you'll have to do this and you can't go there and you'll have to go here. We do whatever we think is best. If we've got the means, we'll go wherever we can to seek for help. Our housing, our public health service, our welfare, education, whatever it may be, we are looking for other areas, looking into other areas for help. We are not just looking towards the BIA any longer. And there have been many programs that have come to the reservation, such as your OEO, EDA, the HUD, which is housing program, your Small Business Administration. And we have organizations that have been formed, organized, that are willing to help out in any way that they can. We are looking towards them today. And I think, I do not know whether the BIA really agree with this or not. But we are making this move today. And we're going to continue. And we find it to be very successful. As I have said in many of my speeches or statements, that the Indian people do not want sympathy. We do not want handouts. What we want and need is an opportunity. And I believe that we have potentials on the reservation. We have resources that could be developed with what land that we have now. Well, many of our young people today, many of our young adults today who have talents but have never had the opportunity to really bring out the talents that they have. And one of the most important things that I have found with our people today, especially with the young people, that they want an education. Because they see that education is the only way out. Education is the only way that they can make a decent livelihood. And so they are doing everything to advance themselves in education. Many of our people who did not think that education was important during their time begin to realize that this is what we need. Unfortunately, they were unable to complete their high school education. They were unable to go to have any college training. So therefore, they are handicapped. But as they realize that this is the only way out, they are making every effort, trying to find ways of getting some type of training. And I believe that there is training that could take place on reservations. You know, many a times the BIA try to give us a training, and they set up the training somewhere off the reservation. And they want to bring the people to these areas in order to train. But this does not work out too well at all times. They have had a relocation program where they sent out families into metropolitan areas, hoping that they would remain there and do the work that they had set out for them. But many of them have come back because They were not prepared to go out in that way with their families. But there is a way that a training could take place for the Indian people on reservations. But as I say, that education today is the leading part for the Indian people. This is what they want. The reason why many of our people are living off the reservation is because of job opportunities. We do not have the employment, we do not have the jobs. Therefore, they have to go out and find a way of getting by. And I know that the young people who are getting the education today, they are going to have something that they could use, that they could back up on. But we have so many who do not have that today. And so, as we go along, I am hoping that there would be a way of helping these young people, that there would be a way that they could be giving a help to advance themselves, to get the education that they want and that they are in need of. And just like in anything else, finance is something that discourages many of our young people, not only Indians, but anyone that wants an education. If they do not have the finance, this is a great discouragement. In the past, you know, the Indian people did not think that education was too important. In fact, my father and my mother did not think it was important when I was in grade school. And one of the reasons why I say this is because it did not make any difference to them whether I attended school regularly. It did not make any difference to them whether I had a good report card, whether I had A, B, C, D, or even F. Because it didn't mean that important to them. But as they went along and as I went along with my schooling, I begin to realize and I begin to see that my father and my mother were getting more interested. They were more concerned. They begin to talk to us. They begin to encourage us that we must go on. We must do everything we can to attend school and to try to do our work as required. They begin to see that it is important. My father told me, I'm like a blind man. I'm like a man that is deaf. Just because I do not read, I do not understand, I do not speak the English language. Is I would not have you be in this condition that I am in. He says, so you have two choices. He had a pencil and a spoon that he laid out. He says, you choose one of the two. And I tried to figure out what the spoon and the pencil meant. Of course, the pencil meant education. And the spoon meant a shovel. He says, if you want to continue going out, digging a ditch, digging a post hole, he says, take the shovel. But if you want an education, then you choose the pencil. And so, I have tried to choose the pencil. And I try to encourage others that we couldn't, even if we wanted to take the shovel, we could no longer use it anymore. You have to be something. You have to learn something about machinery before you can dig a post hole today. Because they don't use shovels anymore. It's all machinery. If you want to dig a ditch, you don't have to have a shovel. They have machines for them. You have to know something in order to operate a machine that will dig a ditch. So not even the shovel is going to help you. It takes education. And I say that education is in a broad field. It is everything. It's not only in textbooks. It's everything that we do today. You must be educated somehow and in some way in order to do so. Do the work. And so that is very important to the people today. And I do hope that the National Congress, the affiliated tribes, and our own tribal organizations would make a stand and would do everything within their power that the Indian people today would be prepared somehow. I know that one of these days our reservations would probably no longer exist. We would probably have termination one of these days. This is one of the main problems that the Indian people are confronted with. Each time they have a new organization or new administration, a termination bill is always introduced, or the Congress is always threatening doing away with the Indian reservation. But so long as we have the opportunity, and so long as we have the leadership, so long as we have the organizations, we are going to make a stand that we keep what we have today and that we try to develop what we could develop before we go into termination. But as I say that sometime in the future, there will probably be a gradual termination. What I want is that the Indian people be prepared. And when that time comes, that they would be ready to go out and live like any other American citizen. Although that today we are striving and we are seeking, just like any other American. And as I say, we do not want to take handouts. We want to be of help, not only for the reservations, not only for the Indian people, but we want to be a help to this country that we live in. We want to be able to help out in the problems that we are confronted with. We want to be able to suggest and give our opinions, give our recommendations to make this country a better country that we live in. And so, this afternoon, or this evening, I am hoping that this has given a little enlightenment of what the Indian people are doing and what the efforts are. And what we are striving for at this time. There is one other thing that I want to mention. That we are hoping that the Indians would help with the policy making in Washington, D.C., anything that pertains to Indians. There was one move that we made. We had asked that we have some of our Indian people of the Indian descent be recognized and be selected as holding some of the positions with the Commissioner of Indian Affairs in his office. We've accomplished some. I've been told that they have selected some 13 Indian people that is going to work with his office. Because I feel that we have the people. We have people that is able and that's capable of doing this. And I believe that we can make a little more progress talking with our own Indian people and having them as our voice back in Washington, D.C. And so it is a great stride. We have many problems. Not only Indians, everybody has problems. But there is one thing that I've always said, you know, as far as our Indian way of life or cultural traditions or whatever it may be, whenever we have our Indian gatherings, our Indian dances, Indian celebrations, we just set aside all those problems that we are confronted with. And we just get together and have a good time. We try to live the old Indian life. After our celebrations, we take back those burdens and put them on our shoulders again. But this is something that it is a good feeling when you can go back and live some of the Indian way. Especially during our celebrations, we set up our teepees. We have our dancing area all prepared, and we put on our Indian costumes, and we do our dancing. This is something that recognizing what used to be with our ancestors. And so I want you folks, you, whenever you have the opportunity that you come to the reservation and that you visit with the Indian people and find out just what the reservation is like. Find out who are the people. We do not exclude anybody. Although it's a reservation, but it's just like any other area. Sometimes you might read about Indian people, the drunks, the winos. But let me tell you, there's always a handful. I don't care what area you're going to. Maybe you have some in Philadelphia. They do their drinking. But the majority are trying and they're making an effort. They want to do what is right and they are trying to make a livelihood for their people, for their family. So we're not all drunkards on the reservation. We're not always standing there reaching for something. We're making the same kind of efforts as any other community is doing. And I invite you folks, I give you folks this invitation. Whenever you in Washington, D.C., come to the National Congress office. That's where I have my office. Come and make some inquiries. I'm sure there's a lot of interesting literatures that you could obtain from our office. We have our Indian people that's working right in the office in Washington, D.C. It's a separate office. And all Indians are working. We want you to make your inquiries and visit the office. And so with that, as I say that this is a way to communicate much more and a lot better. You know, there's too much of this. Sometimes we sit there and we watch television. We watch movies, and cowboys and Indians, you know. And we begin to see how the Indians live and all this and that. I just want to tell you a story that I told last night about the TV versions and the movie versions. It's about an Easterner, maybe he was from Philadelphia, I don't know, came out west to visit a friend of his, a white friend. And this one summer that he came out, he came to his friend, and his friend told him, say, you've been coming out here visiting me. He says, I want you to do something different this year. I want you to have a different experience. I want you to come up and meet an Indian friend of mine, an Indian chief. And so this fellow from the East was very excited over this. He was going to have an Indian friend, meet an Indian friend. So they went uptown. There they saw this old chief sitting there. And so his friend told him, there's my friend there. I'll have you acquainted, get acquainted with him. So they went to the chief and he got acquainted, made friends. And on their way to meeting this chief, his friend told him, there is something about this chief. He says, he has a very good memory. He can remember things from way back. And I want you to ask him a question so I can prove to you that he has a good memory. So after he got acquainted with the chief, his friend told him, well, why don't you ask him a question? And so the fellow asked the old chief, so say, chief, I understand that you have a pretty good memory. You can remember things of way back. The old chief says, yeah. Says, well, could you remember what you had for breakfast 5 years ago this morning? The old chief says, eggs. And that was it. He told his friend, well, that don't prove anything. Anybody can come up with that kind of an answer. Anyway, he went back home, and 2 years later, he came back to see his friend. But before he went to his friend, he thought, well, I'm going to go see my Indian friend. You know, he was really glad to have an Indian friend. I'm going to go see him first before I go to my friend's place. And so he went right on into this little town. There was the old chief. He was still there. So he came to him. And before he come to the chief, he began to wonder. And he began to try to find a way of greeting the chief. He didn't know how to greet him. But he wanted to greet him. And so he thought, as he was standing there, he thought of this TV version. He says, well, I think I'll try this on the chief, see if it will work. And so he walked up to the old chief, and you know, with all seriousness, he was really glad to see him. He stood before the old chief, and he threw his hand up. And he says, how? The old chief looked up at him and says, scrambled. So many times televisions do not give the truth information. With the blackfeet, we do not greet one another as saying, huh? There may be tribes that do. But if the Blackfeet was to greet one another, they would say, okay. It's almost like okay, but it's okay. Now, different tribes have a different way of greeting one another. We have our dances that vary, ceremonial dances. But we have one dance that is pretty much in common, and it is the war dancing, or the grass dance as we refer to it. And the round dance is a dance that is used by almost every tribe. I was looking at a picture here of Mr. Hetzel's. Some people, I guess they were Mohawks from New York, where they were performing the round dance. So this is a dance that is used socially. But as far as our ceremonial dances and gatherings, they vary with the different tribes. They have different ways of having their ceremonial dancing. And as far as religion, that varies with the different tribes. The only thing that some of the tribes are still, they try to use when they visit with one another, is the sign language. They try to use that, to try to keep this up. But even that has changed. The different tribes have their own way of sign language. But I guess in the past with our ancestors, this is one way that they communicated, was they tried to use the sign language. And so I do hope that this has given some enlightenment, some information to you, that what we are trying to do and the efforts that we have and the Indian people have today. We are striving on, and we're going to continue. And I'm hoping that we would have one powerhouse that we could feed into. And that one powerhouse, we expect that it would feed back to the Indian people. But if we have too many powerhouses and directed in many directions, we are not going to have any feedback. So the National Congress or any major organization that is formed, that is direct, that have, are directing themselves in the same, for the same goals, this is what we need. I just found out this year that there are too many organizations that's taking place. We have small organizations, small groups that are forming, Indian groups. And we really don't know just which way they're directing themselves. This is one of the reasons we're having a meeting here in Washington, D.C. next week. The National Congress, area vice presidents, and the executive members are meeting, so that we can discuss some of these groups that are forming, the organizations that are getting together, and try to reach these people and find out just how can we combine our efforts, how can we come together so that we can make a solid move in one way. That is why I have to come back to D.C. next week. And so, with that, I want to, if there are any questions now, I do not know just exactly what you expected here today, but if you have any questions that you have, I don't know whether we have the time, but whatever it is, I'll try to answer for you at this time.